Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on The Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're going to talk about a police reform. The show has been a huge topic for us. The Real News Network is hosting a town hall forum about real police reform tonight at 7 o'clock. And Eddie Conway joins us. Eddie Conway, producer at The Real News Network, executive producer, I think, The Real News Network is his real title, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Former Black Panther leader and political prisoner and co-author of Martial Law, The Life and Times of Baltimore Black Panther, Jackie Rabarge, who's founder of Power Inside and director of Power Inside, will be joining us in a few minutes as well. Eddie, good to have you with us in the studio. Welcome.
All right. Thanks for having me here.
Y'all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, send an email to talk@steinershow.org. And, of course, Eddie, we were just talking before we went on the air. Interesting, we're still this police reform battle we're talking about now here in Baltimore and across the country, but here in Baltimore. And you just returned from California.
Yes.
From the 50th anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party.
Yeah, that's correct.
Right? And so I was just thinking about that in relationship to where we are now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, here we are kind of wrestling with this serious issue. Mm-hmm. And really, in many ways, the question of especially in urban areas, of what police do and how they police, in many ways, it was the Panther Party that brought that to our attention in the very beginning, back in 1968.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, in 66.
66. So talk,
okay.
I mean, yeah, 66, right. What year is this?
Yes, all right.
Maybe we're getting too old here. So talk about what that connection for you.
Well, it's a tragedy that it's still an issue across America, but the reality, according to research, is that it's always been an issue, going all the way back to Ida B. Wells and her research, and Tuskegee and so on. So those lynchings have just developed into a legalized form of lynching, but it's persistent. Every 28 hours, and it's sad that we're still in that predicament.
Jackie, good to have you on the show with us. Welcome. It's always good to see you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. I made it.
That's good. That's good. So, I'm curious about the summit's going to focus on tonight. I mean, I was asked to be in the summit. I'm still going to try to come down tonight. But talk a bit about, you know, what we are facing in Baltimore and what we're trying to do here.
Wow. Well, so it's a real honor to be here and to be talking about this issue with so many longtime activists. I'm really so moved by the deep level organizing that's been going on, especially in the last couple of years. Power Inside has been working on one particular aspect of policing, which is the gender bias and the sexual violence by Baltimore City police officers. And so I know that piece will come up. What I hope we can do is to continue to frame the issues as racial justice issues, and from our angle to make sure that people understand that there's an intersection between race and gender that is playing out in the findings of the Department of Justice investigation. And if we do not address that head on, we are going to miss the point of what the findings tell us about what the police are doing to women in the communities.
Now, I know that it's not easy to move to change the nature of public safety and the away from the establishment paradigm, which really controls how it moves, or in terms of the power of the Fraternal Order of Police and the police department itself, in terms of their political power. But it seems to me that one of the things that we should be talking about is kind of really major radical reform of what we even mean by public safety in Baltimore. And one of the things I was thinking about was that, you know, maybe one of the things Carl Stokes talked about doing the primary, which I think needs to be expanded upon, was taking money out from the police budget to create a different model of what we do in our communities and how we self-police our communities. Now we take control of our communities where the first responders are not just the police coming in and just arresting masses of people or shooting people or verbally or physically abusing people. I mean, so how much that will be part of this conversation, do you think, Eddie?
Well, I think when we look at reforms, you know, we have to look at things like restorative justice, the community making determinations who who should pay what and who should be sanctioned how, and how those price costs and sanctions can heal the community as opposed to continuing to tear the community apart. That's one of the things that I think is going to be important. Having a review board that has subpoena power and the ability to hire and fire people that violate the constitutional rights of the citizens, which according to DOJ is every day, that will make a difference. Having even, and this is my own personal pet peeve, is having a residential requirement for people. If you if you're working for Baltimore City and you're police in Baltimore City, you should live in Baltimore City, and then you would know the citizens and know the culture and interact with them a lot better. So I think all of those things will probably be on the table for discussion tonight, in addition to a lot more.
You know, because I think that one of the things that we've talked about in the show a lot when it comes to police reform, at least I have, is that I keep thinking, I forget the name of this young boy who was shot in the leg by the police. This stands out in my head for some reason. Two things stand out in my head, and I just want to throw this out to you all. Well, A is this little boy who was shot. He was 13 years old. Remember, he was carrying a basketball and a toy gun. Mm-hmm. And then the police confronted him, and he
ran. In what city?
In Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
This happened over the summer.
Okay.
And police shot him in the leg. And I say that because, I mean, if we had money taken out of the police department and put into, let's say, having either something like Safe Streets, Women from Power Inside being hired as former sex workers instead of being health workers in the street, a different model, that boy may have never been shot, or other kids may have been shot. He may have been, I could see somebody going to him and saying, someone, is that in your hand? And where's your mother? Where do you live? And kind of dealing with it in a very different way, right? Mm-hmm. And that for most minor crimes, if we could just deal with, as you were talking about, restorative justice and put money into that, you know, and people putting, I mean, we were the capital of, in this country, in doing more with restorative justice in terms of community mediation than any other city in the country, but the city won't pay attention to its own kind of people who in the city who have created that, and to do that in a different model. I mean, how we really force them to think that we can spend our money differently to build a different model of public safety and community building. You know, that's the kind of thing I've been thinking about a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been shown that the putting more money in the police department does not keep anyone any safer, including survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. So I think people need to really shift how they're thinking about what is a good expenditure. And if you look at Downtown Partnership investing $200,000 in policing,
right.
Private foundation paying for surveillance. So one of my concerns is, yes, we need to move money out of the police department, but we also have to look at this pay-to-play where private policing is now being inserted into the community, and a lot of it is off-duty police officers who have the same culture, the same training, the same trauma. And so I'm really concerned that we might just replicate it if we're not very mindful about how we go about reform.
Off-duty police officers who are hired privately have the same power as they do when they're working publicly.
And less accountability.
And less accountability.
And we barely have accountability now.
Mm-hmm. And it's a concern, especially the surveillance, when private citizens can finance surveillance operations on other citizens through the police department without the consent of the government, the mayor, the city council, and so on. Like the airplane that's flying over Baltimore and filming 32 square miles of a citizen activity. And it's a concern. Where does that information, who has access to that information? Where do it end up at if it's being financed by private citizens and the citizens of Baltimore has no say-so in what's going on? That's a concern. And it's other stuff like that that's really a concern. And so reforms need to be made in terms of how we also decide how we're going to be policed.
I mean, and what you're saying, we did the show about this the other day, just the idea, we're going to go to phones here, that the surveillance units that were flying overhead, plus this new facial recognition software that we're using, plus this massive system of public and private cameras that are now all coordinated, whether it's a private business camera or a public police camera, and all that information is now being synced together. I mean, that is, you know, is that, I mean, we're like being watched 24/7.
Yes.
And people say, oh, if you're not breaking a crime, what difference does it make? But it does make a difference.
Yes, it's Big Brother in reality, the 1984 scenario that we talked about. Now citizens are actually subjected to that without having any say-so in what they're willing to give up in terms of their privacy and so on. A lot of this stuff now can actually look into your windows, look into inside your house, you know. It's a concern.
It's a deep concern. So let me open the phones here so our listeners are thinking of 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air. Welcome.
Steiner.
Leo Burrows. How are you doing, brother?
And everybody. How you guys doing?
All right, man.
And ladies.
Hey.
Well, look, I'm going to ask you to take a look at my Facebook page.
Oh.
It's Leo W. Burrows, Jr. Facebook page. And on that page, I have a petition that I'm asking folks to sign. The petition is directed to the governor of the state of Maryland, to the president of the state Senate, and the speaker of the House, Mike Bush and Mike Miller and all, asking that the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, 1974 Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, be repealed in the state of Maryland, be abolished, and that the state create a commission on reparations to repair the damage done to documented victims of police brutality and false imprisonment in the state from 2000 until the present. I'm sure it's not a perfect document, but we got to look at how this Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights has violated the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which says that no state shall make any laws which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States. So it's institutionalized in this state, and we need to change that. And is there the political will to do anything about it? I'm not so sure that it exists. But we've got to make it happen.
Leo, good. Always good. Thank you, Leo. Let me get another couple of callers in here that we can get back to our guests here to kind of close this out and talk a bit more. Thank you, Leo. Always good to hear from you, brother. 410-319-8888. Doug, you're on the air. Doug Colbert, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Hi, brother.
Hi, Mr. Conway. Hi, Jackie.
Okay.
Nice to hear both of you. Everything that folks are saying in terms of what needs to be talked about tonight, and I'm planning to attend myself, is absolutely true. I would merely want to point out that we have a system of justice, and when police make arrests, and they're not good arrests, but they keep people in jail, there's an enormous amount of money that's generated from every arrest. And one of the things that I hope we talk about tonight is those who are profiting handsomely at the expense of people who don't have money. And what I'm talking about is to eliminate money as the condition that people have to meet in order to regain their freedom. Half the people in the local jail here in Baltimore, Mark, are being held not because of a danger to anyone or because they're a flight risk, but only because they're too poor, they don't have enough money to make bail. And the people who do get out have to pay bail bondsmen this 10% fee. And I think our attorney general has really taken a big step forward in terms of calling for the elimination of money,
right,
where the only purpose is to keep people in jail. So I would like very much for people to appreciate that when police make arrests, they can count on a number of judges who are going to be setting impossible bails. My students this semester have represented 14 people and gotten 12 of them out of jail, and the bails that they're seeing for riding a dirt bike amount to a $50,000 bond or $5,000 cash only. And it's getting so out of hand at this point that I really hope that the community addresses that issue as well.
Doug, thanks so much. Some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just a short story to reinforce that. We have a woman that we worked with who was arrested on the street for open container. She was given a citation at the time, and she forgot to show up in court. They wrote a bench warrant to arrest her. They brought her to jail. So they spent all this money to send three police officers into a federal housing building and extract her from the building, put her in jail. And her bail was not more than $100. She could not afford that. She spent 10 days in jail, and they actually tried to put her on probation. In court, and it was just like, where are we going to stop? She couldn't afford the bail. Was 10 days enough? And she wasn't even convicted of this charge of open container. And it just, there's a huge interplay between how we police, why people end up in jail, and why they stay in jail.
You know, and I think New York and probably other states have outlawed the bail itself. And what happens is, in addition to it being a penalty for the poorest segment of society, and, they also end up creating a situation where people stay in prison and in jail, and it also causes the taxpayer. It's a burden on both ends. It's a burden in terms of loss of jobs, employment, liberty, et cetera, but it's also a burden on the taxpayer. And only a small segment of the population is benefiting from that. So certainly bail needs to be completely removed as a requirement for returning back to the community after you are arrested.
Try to get in the call in here, 410-319-8888. Sean, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks, Mark, for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, look, I have, I think, a really quick response for this. Now, it seems to me that if we're trying to get the culture of police changed and getting them to look at the community as a certain way, I feel like some of those issues are deeper. But I think an easy first step is for us to stop creating a situation where it's us against them. And so what I mean is, let's do something simple like the $5 million that, or $5 or $6 million that was paid out in terms of legal fines and whatnot for discrimination cases. Let's say we take that out of the raises for police officers. So then that creates a them against them situation. It's a divide and conquer. So instead of us trying to police them, if they know that their raises are based on bad cops not doing what they're doing, then they're going to start policing each other. I just think if you can work through the FOP for that, I know going through the collective bargaining agreement wouldn't be that easy, but just as simple as having them police each other, because they don't care about us, but they'll care about their money. They'll care about their paychecks. And so I think that's at least a start. Now, that doesn't fix, you know, how the community policing and all those other great points you're making, but I think that that could be a good first step. But my point is just saying, if we can make it not just us against them, because we keep making their connections to each other stronger when we do that. So if we can increase some sort of way to kind of crack that, I think that could help.
What were your thoughts on that? If that came up tonight in your town meeting, what would you say?
Yes, I honestly do accept the fact that the penalty for them violating citizens' rights and abusing citizens should fall upon them and not the taxpayers, because as it stands today, the taxpayers are actually paying for their abuses of other taxpayers and other citizens. If that comes out of their budget, that would have an impact on how they would treat the citizens if they knew it was going to cost them. But it needs to not just come out of their budget, but it actually needs to come out of their salaries also.
Back to the phones, 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air. Welcome.
Morning.
Morning, Michael.
I totally agree with the money should come out their budgets. That's the best sounding thing I've heard yet. But to the comment earlier about the person on the dirt bike, those dirt bikes are a nuisance in Baltimore City. They are. You know, I think of the 24-year-old lady that was killed by a dirt bike.
I remember that. You
know, and this was right after the riots.
Right, I remember that.
You know, but no one petitioned for her. You know, and her child has no longer has a mother now. And no one did that. I think about the police detective that she was off duty. She hit one. She stopped to assist, and the rest of them jumped her. You know, these dirt bikes are a nuisance, and they need to be they need to be eliminated with. If the air surveillance is surveilling them to find out where those bikes are, I'm all for that.
All right, so what Michael was saying, let's get into this a minute, because this is about part of the complexity of the reality. So how do you respond to that?
Well, first and foremost, if the dirt bikes are a nuisance, then the city should do like other municipalities and create a dirt bike park for them, create a place in which they can operate and have recreations. They're not going to disappear. So if you're going to spend money surveillance, the helicopters is costing tens of thousands of dollars to chase them around, why not spend that money, create a dirt bike park, allow them a place to have where they can have their recreation, and then you won't have to chase them around the city. That's one thing. People and citizens, obviously it's always bad news when people get killed by either vehicles, automobiles, or dirt bikes, or any other kind of way. That's a tragedy, and it spreads throughout all society. But I think it's if you go outside of Baltimore City to Baltimore County, dirt bikes are running around without being a criminal activity. You come in the city, it's a criminal activity. We need to address why that is, and we need to give them a place in which they can operate.
Yeah, I mean, I know that death was a huge loss, and also at the same time, we've spent so many decades and centuries being reactive to issues that we really deeply believe that the police can solve these problems. And we need to get underneath and look at that there is almost no social or health issue that cannot be solved without the police. We don't need the police in most cases, including dirt bikes. There is going to be a transition, if we ever acknowledge that we can solve problems without the police, where there could be chaos. But we have to start somewhere and really start looking at restorative justice, at looking at prevention, at looking at decriminalizing things that really aren't even well dealt with by law enforcement.
But sometimes I think that part of the discussion is very difficult is to figure out how to address some of these things, because many people in many communities, while they fear the police, also fear the anarchy in their streets. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think those things are both real. So, you know, that.
It's hard as someone who's, a sexual assault survivor, domestic violence survivor, to imagine what would the world look like without having the police intervene in those circumstances. And I'm not completely resolved on how to do that, because, you know, I'm in this culture as well. And the default is, when someone broke into my house, was to call the police. And so, I don't have a good answer, but I think it is something that we all need to wrestle with.
You know, one of the things that happened, if you have that problem in the street, when you look at the prison system, 80% of the people in the prison system are in the prison system in some drug-related kind of charge or activity. And if you decriminalize that kind of behavior, you're going to have less conflict. But at the same time, if there's no jobs in Baltimore City, or if there's no jobs in which people can get employment, earn a living, and so on, yes, you're going to continue to have that problem. And if you don't address that, the unemployed issue or the underemployment issue, as you pour millions and millions of dollars into down the inner harbor,
right,
you're going to have that anarchy in the community. And so you need to figure out what's causing that.
So that's a perfect segue for two things. A, our next conversation coming up in the next half hour is about jobs and the job summit coming up in Baltimore and what that means. But tell folks about tonight. and what time and where?
We're having a town hall meeting at the Real News, and that's 231 North Holiday Street at 7 o'clock tonight. And what we want to determine is, what does real police reform look like? We want to hear from the citizens. We want to see whether or not we can come up with some ideas and some plans and strategy to move forward in the future, so we might be able to implement some of these reforms.
So, folks, be there. It should be an interesting conversation. A lot of really fascinating people are going to be in part of this panel. Maybe me, I'm not sure. I didn't respond yet, but if they still need me, I'll be there.
Well, we need you, so you might as well respond now. I'm asking you. Okay? All right.
Eddie Conway, executive producer of Real News Network. Jackie Robarge, who is founder and director of Power Inside, a project of Fusion Partnerships. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And folks, turn out tonight. It'll be interesting. Given knowing Eddie and what he does there, it's going to be an interesting conversation. Stay with us. We're going to come right back and have a conversation about another summit coming up this weekend, the Job Summit. Stay with us.